Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey everyone, I'm Josh Radner, and I am so excited to tell you about How We Made Your Mother, a rewatch podcast looking back at How I Met Your Mother. And I'm here with Craig Thomas, who co-created the show along with Carter Bays. Hi, Craig.
Hey, Josh. Somehow it has been 20 years since the show premiered. I'm going to check the math on that. 10 years since it went off the air, and we thought that made this a perfect time to look back, see what the hell we did, and why the show still seems to resonate with fans around the world today.
Follow and listen to How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.
FanDuel's got an offer you don't want to miss this NFL season. New customers can bet just $5 and get $300 in bonus bets if you win. That's right, pick a bet $5, and if it wins, you'll unlock $300 in bonus bets to use all across the app. You can build parlays, bet player props, ride the live lines, whatever your style, FanDuel has you covered. The NFL season is here. The only question is, are you ready to play? Visit FanDuel.com/sportsfan to download the FanDuel app today and get started.
Must be 21 plus and present in Virginia. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
When it comes to what your family eats and drinks, you know your choices matter. You're the expert because you know what fits your life. And getting it right starts with good information. That's why America's beverage companies are sharing more information about our ingredients at goodtoknowfacts.org. No spin, no judgments, just the facts straight from the experts for more than 140 beverage ingredients. Visit goodtoknowfacts.org.
This episode is brought to you by State Farm. Listening to this podcast? Smart move. Being financially savvy? Smart move. Another smart move? Having State Farm help you create a competitive price when you choose to bundle home and auto. Bundling. Just another way to save with the personal price plan. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Prices are based on rating plans that vary by state. Coverage options are selected by the customer. Availability, amount of discounts and savings, and eligibility vary by state.
It's the amazing Rico Bronya podcast with your host, Evan Roberts.
Welcome in to another edition of The Rico. I'm your host, Evan Roberts. This is going to be the beginning of an excursion because we are going to dive very deep into how the New York Mets somehow accomplished the goal of going 0-70 when trailing after eight innings. We heard that stat so many times throughout the season, not 0-70, but 0-30, 0-35, 0-50, 0-55, 0-60, like all year long. It was hung above our head. Well, in this edition, and there will be a few episodes to get through the full season, we are going to do a deep dive into how it happened. How did the New York Mets go 0-70 when trailing after eight innings? But before we get into it, let me get to some of your emails reacting to some of the latest Rico Bronyas. We obviously talked about Tarek Skubal. We were also handing out lots of grades for David Stearns, Carlos Mendoza, and Met players. So let me take some of your feedback, respond to it. Let me kick it off with John in Denver, who wanted to correct something, and he's right for doing it. John writes, Evan Hoff loved the show. The last two episodes you've mentioned that AJ Minter had Tommy John and have talked about him returning mid-season next year. I don't think this is right. He had a lat injury, and according to reports, I'll see him ready for spring training. Here's to hoping he has a full and healthy recovery in 2026. You're correct, John. One thing I do often is confuse injuries. It happens quite a bit. So you're right. AJ Minter had a torn lat, had surgery to fix it, and his timetable has him ready for spring training and potentially the start of the year. AJ Minter has a player option of $11 million. We'll get that answer in the next couple of weeks on if he's going to pick it up or not. Because he missed so much of the season, and because he even missed parts of the previous year, I lean towards the fact that he would cash in on the $11 million and come back and then hopefully have a big, healthy full season and then go back in a free agency after the 26th season. But you are right, and I do want to fix that because that's a big deal. And certainly something we'll be diving deeper into as we get closer to spring training. Not Tommy John. Instead, it was a torn lat. Richard writes, the David Stearns Carlos Mendoza episode. That was actually episode 571. If you missed it, we graded David Stearns, went through basically all the moves he made and some of the moves he didn't make. Rich from Westchester writes, I'm not going to go back to try to find the episodes after the trades happened, but your reactions to the trades at the trade deadline seem positive. For some reason, I think you guys really like those trades. It's pretty important. I thought they were great moves, but the players were disappointing, not David Stearns' fault. Here's the thing, and I got another email about this, the Monday morning quarterbacking of trades. I acknowledge that there were moves that he made that I liked that did not work, and vice versa. But when you're grading somebody, when you're grading the team president, we don't have to grade ourselves. Now, we could have a separate episode of the Rico Bronya where we grade my opinions. There'll be some bad grades. I acknowledge that. I wanted them to sign Corbin Burns. That's an F for Evan Roberts. I wanted Mark Vientos to be on the roster at the start of opening day in 2024. That's an A for Evan Roberts. But we're not grading me. We're not grading Hoff. We're grading David Stearns. So I don't see an issue with us liking a trade, the trade not working out, and us giving David Stearns a tough grade. More on this comes from Andre, who writes, Evan, while I understand that Pete generally is the emotional and complete outcome-based voice, I don't know if that's a negative or a compliment, or I'm not sure. I generally appreciate your view beyond the pure results. In this case, you have gone full Monday morning quarterbacking, though, which I get for ratings on the fan, but not on the Rico B. First of all, we always try to get ratings on WFAN. I am never saying anything to try to get ratings. I'm just saying things. Whether they're stupid, smart, intellectual, dumb, or amazing, that's for you to decide. Anyhow, Andre goes on, considering what was available and what it cost in the offseason and at the deadline, your grades on Stearns seems way too harsh. First of all, if you're looking just at short-term outcome, maybe you want to give grades to the LA Dodgers offseason and deadline. After all, they just won the pennant. A hint, it was atrocious. Conforto, Tanner Scott, Teoscar Hernandez, Blake Treinen, Kirby Yates, and even Blake Snell. That was over $110 million in AAV for 2025 and less production than Clay Holmes and Griffin Canning had combined, let alone Juan Soto. So what were the options? Nick Pivetta and Nate Eovaldi both got the qualifying offer and would have damaged the Mets draft and IFA pool even worse. Eovaldi also explicitly wanted to stay in Texas. Buehler, Kikuchi, and Severino were the main alternatives to Minaya, Holmes, and Montas. Results would have been close to the same. That part's not true. The Walker-Buehler results would have been the same thing I'll buy. I don't know if you could say that about Severino or Kikuchi. The same as Minaya? Minaya missed the entire first half of the year. And then when he pitched to a 5 ERA. Kikuchi was A, better than that, and B, we went over it with Severino. His splits were so extreme between Sacramento and the road that I have every reason to believe that if he was re-signed, his numbers would have been a hell of a lot closer to what he did on the road versus what he did in Sacramento, but I digress. At the trade deadline, the Phillies traded three of their top 10 prospects for Bader and Durant, basically the equivalent of A.J. Ewing for Bader and Sproat and Reimer for Durant. Mets decided to not go all in and not trade a single top 10 in their system prospect. Rodgers was fine, 2.35 ERA. Soto did what he does. And Helsley and Mullins were terrible. Was it a great winter? No. Was it a great deadline? Certainly not. But did it set back the team at all? No. No crippling contract. No prospect likely to be of impact to anyone. So here's the problem with Bader and Durant. Now, I was not devastated that they didn't get Johan Durant. I wanted him, but I also understood that the cost was going to be incredible, considering he is an elite-level closer and considering he was under team control. If they make that trade for Bader and you use the comp, they would have traded A.J. Ewing as the package that goes back. Let's say you're right about that. If Harrison Bader is traded to the New York Mets, would we not all agree the New York Mets are a playoff team? By accident? I mean, considering the level of production they got out of center field and the fact they missed the playoffs by one game, there isn't a huge margin for error. That trade, even though it would have involved a prospect you weren't comfortable giving up, would have led to the Mets probably winning a few more games, definitely making the playoffs. Now we get to playoff land where I know people don't want to admit this because the Dodgers look like a juggernaut. They could have beat the Dodgers. And I've said this all year, whether it was on the Fan or here on the Rico, the time to beat the Dodgers was always going to be early. They are a loaded team. We knew that. I remember screaming that during the offseason to everybody saying, we know they're the team to beat. We know they're the best. But in the postseason, especially in a best of five, or in this case, a best of three, that's your moment to take them down. So I certainly couldn't have confidence that the Mets were going to take them down in a best of three. If they make any one of those deals you mentioned, but we'll stick with Bader for now, and make the postseason, well, then all of a sudden, maybe they do take the Dodgers out in a best of three. Now, the odds are, because of the Met pitching, even if they did take the Dodgers out, they're getting picked off by the how they get past the Phillies, maybe they get picked off by Milwaukee. The odds of them getting through with all the flaws that they ultimately showed and winning a World Series, they were not high. I know that. But if that deal goes down that you mentioned, as uncomfortable as it would have been in giving up a better prospect, they're a playoff team. And I don't know how this season finishes out. But the point is, on grades and Monday morning quarterbacking, I admit it's Monday morning quarterbacking. I remember my opinions on all of these things. And some of them I was very wrong about. I have no problem admitting that. I don't care. And when I'm right, I feel uncomfortable reminding people I'm right because then I'm a jerk. Now, speaking of things that I've said that have pissed people off, a lot of people don't like the Tarek Skubal discussion and what I said I'm willing to give up. I want to make this very clear. There are a lot of comps we can try to come up with on Tarek Skubal being traded with a year left of control and being this elite level pitcher. You can try to say Garrett Crochet. While I don't love the comp, you can try. You can try to say Corbin Burns. You could even go back further to our own history and bring up Johan Santana and Mike Hampton. This is unique. It is unique. It is not the same as Garrett Crochet, who had one good year as a major league starting pitcher, and in that one good year, wasn't exactly throwing seven innings. He threw a very limited amount of innings for a horrible baseball team. To comp Garrett Crochet, even with an extra year of control, which I get is valuable, but to comp that to a guy who is likely to be a two-time Cy Young Award winner and has already pitched a winner-take-all Game 5 of the Division Series, I think is ridiculous. I think it's a terrible comp. People are using it, and I'm telling you, it's different. The comparison of Corbin Burns is, I think, a little bit closer, but you know what's also different? Let me walk you through a few of the things that are different. Number one, I think Skubal's better. Okay, easy. He's going to be coming off of back-to-back Cy Youngs. Corbin Burns was not. And number two, and this is the number one thing to keep in mind, the Detroit Tigers are not a small market team. They are not the Brewers. Are they the Mets? No. Are they the Red Sox? No. Are they the Dodgers? No. But they are a team, unlike Milwaukee, who knew they weren't re-signing Corbin Burns, who knows they're not re-signing Freddie Peralta at the end of next year. The Tigers would like to re-sign Tarek Skubal. Are they going to? Probably not. But they are not one to just give it up. And so because of that, they naturally have more leverage because they don't have to trade him. So the combination of Skubal being better than a lot of the other comps we try to bring up, and then the fact that the Tigers are in a more of a position of power than anyone else because they could conceivably just say, we're keeping him. We're going to try to re-sign him. We may not, but you know what? Here's what happens if we don't re-sign him. We gave ourselves a third crack at winning a world championship, and we'll get the comp pick. May not be as great of the package that we would get, but I think those are the things that give the Tigers a little bit of an edge. But let me get to two of your emails, and I promise we'll get into this deep dive because we got a lot of work to do. Lance writes, your Scooble trade is crazy. You might as well throw in Gary, Keith, and Ron while you're at it. Alvarez, Peterson, Jet, or Benj, Sprout, or Tong? Thank God you aren't the president of baseball operations. I agree that you need to give them major leaguers plus prospects, but you're giving them a near Skeens level package. Alvarez shows way too much potential and leadership to trade for a rental. They can pick from Mauricio Vientos Beatty and Peterson Senga. Then give them two of your slightly lower but still top 10 prospects, Clifford, Ewing, Santucci, Reimer, unless they have a lesser option on Sprout or Tong and want to sell high. But I wouldn't touch Benj or Jet for a rental with an injury history. Do we really want to see Jonah Tong striking out 12 and Benj hit a homer and drive in three in a playoff game for the Tigers next year? To continue bashing my trade idea, John writes, and this was such a great email. I read this on Evan and Tiki as well. John writes, you get hit on the head lately? I usually love the show and look forward to your bitching and moaning about the Mets. You usually say exactly what's on my mind. But today, I have to ask you a favor. Get your head out of your bleeping ass. Putting the 23-year-old Francisco Alvarez as part of that ridiculously overloaded package you suggested on your most recent podcast for the rental of Tarek Skubal is easily the most absurd thing that's ever come out of your mouth, at least on your podcast. I don't know you personally. To give up a young stud catcher that should be a big part of the team's future for many years to come is inconceivable. The Alvarez situation reminds me so much of Travis d'Arnaud, a young receiver with great offensive possibilities that just needed a little bit of coaching to realize he was a gap hitter and not just a slugger. We traded him to the Braves as part of the R.A. Dickey deal. Well, hold on. We traded him to the Braves as part of the R.A. Dickey deal, and Travis went on to be a superstar. You got that backwards. We got d'Arnaud in the R.A. Dickey trade. We just cut Travis d'Arnaud. I mean, I'm trying to think. He was making a decent amount of money. He got off to an awful start, and the Mets literally DFA'd him, and he bounced around. He went to Tampa. He went to the Dodgers. Eventually, he went to the Braves. So I do have to correct you on that. Anyhow, getting Skubal for 1 year isn't much of a return. Pitchers inevitably get hurt, often long-term injuries, and will likely leave as a free agent after the year. Alvarez has more than proven he's a stud who can play through injuries and would have players hiding in the locker room in the fetal position. That's a weird line. Let's not make the same mistake and take a dump on our future by letting such a young, likable, durable, and key part of the team go. If you want to suggest a reasonable package for a trade, that's fine, my B, but that's not this. Do you have a man crush on Skubal or something? All right. First of all, Tarek Skubal's the best pitcher in baseball. I don't have to have him.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey everyone, I'm Josh Radner, and I am so excited to tell you about How We Made Your Mother, a rewatch podcast looking back at How I Met Your Mother. And I'm here with Craig Thomas, who co-created the show along with Carter Bays. Hi, Craig.
Hey, Josh. Somehow it has been 20 years since the show premiered. I'm going to check the math on that. 10 years since it went off the air, and we thought that made this a perfect time to look back, see what the hell we did, and why the show still seems to resonate with fans around the world today.
Follow and listen to How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.
man crush on him. He's really good. I also believe, unlike 2 years ago, the Mets are in a position to go for it. Now, you got to go for it with some reason. I understand that. I didn't say give everyone up. I didn't offer Hong, McClain, Sproat. I didn't offer everything. I also know, though, to get something, you have to give up something. And to get something, you have to be uncomfortable. So I don't want to trade Francisco Alvarez. I don't want to trade Carson Bender, Jet Williams. But for the reasons I laid out a few minutes ago, the Tigers are in a position of strength. And I think that to make a trade for him, it's going to cost a lot. I don't think it's the same as the Garrett Crochet trade where it's two top 100 prospects and that's it, call it a day. I don't think it's the same as the Johan Santana trade where it's two top 100 prospects and a major league ready outfielder in Carlos Gomez. I think it's more. Because I think the Tigers are in position to just say, we're not trading him. We're going to hold on to him. So this isn't something I want to do. It's something that I think is necessary if you want to trade for the player. But I respectfully understand the Met fan that says, look, we have a billionaire owner. I'd rather wait a year. I get it. I thought the same thing about Soto 2 years ago. The difference is I think this team is close. The difference is Skubal feels like the guy that can get us to the promised land or at least help contribute get us to the promised land. So I'd be willing with a very loaded farm system to trade from a position of strength. But we'll obviously spend a lot more time on this as the offseason rolls on and the Ricos continue in. But I do appreciate the emails and appreciate the feedback.
So good, so good, so good.
Just in, thousands of winter arrivals at your Nordstrom Rack store. Save up to 70% on coats, slippers, and cashmere from Kate Spade, New York, Vince, UGG, Levi's, and more.
Check out these boots.
They've got the best gifts.
My holiday shopping hack? Join the Nordy Club.
Get an extra 5% off every Rack purchase with your Nordstrom credit card. Plus, buy it online and pick it up in-store the same day for free. Big gifts, big perks. That's why you Rack.
Hey everyone, it's Boomer and Geo, and if you're into New York sports or you want straight talk about what's really going on in the sports world, Boomer and Geo is your show.
We're covering it all, Yankees wins, Giants drama, national headlines, and whatever chaos the day brings on the field and off.
No filler, no filters, just real conversation, and believe me, plenty of laughs every weekday morning.
We don't hold back, and we don't waste your time. We get to what actually matters.
That's Boomer and Geo, and you can listen on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods.
When did making plans get this complicated? It's time to streamline with WhatsApp, the secure messaging app that brings the whole group together. Use polls to settle dinner plans, send event invites and pin messages so no one forgets mom's 60th, and never miss a meme or milestone, all protected with end-to-end encryption. It's time for WhatsApp. Message privately with everyone. Learn more at whatsapp.com.
Now, let us get into the topic at hand. And this goes back to another email that we received at thericob@gmail.com. Andy in Smithtown. Andy, I hope you're listening because you have caused this. This monstrosity of a Rico Bronya that we are about to embark on. Andy writes, Evan, a lot has been made of the Mets' 0-70 record when trailing going into the ninth inning. But how about a deeper dive into that? Like, how many of those games were actually winnable, as in trailing by three runs or less? How many were total blowouts? How many of those games did we actually come back to tie only to lose in extra innings? It might be worthwhile. Thanks, Andy in Smithtown. Andy, we are so glad you asked the question because what we are going to try to do on multiple editions of the Rico Bronya is to find out the answer to your question, which is, how did this happen? How many of them were winnable? What did 0-70 truly look like? Now, I think it's important to have some background before we get started. When a team is trailing, going into the ninth inning, they tend to lose. In fact, teams only come back and win about 6% of the time. So we do need to know going in, the ninth inning comeback is fun, and you certainly want to mix in a few throughout the season. They are not common. The team that led the league in coming back and trailing after eight, the figure was only seven times. Now, the Mets last year in 2024 actually led the league. They did it 9 times, which is an enormous number. But I just want perspective to understand that it's not like it happens 30 times a year. It's not like half of your wins are coming from it. It is still a rare occurrence. The other thing that I think it's important to know is that just because you don't come back and win at all during a season isn't normally or isn't always a lock for playoff failures. While the Chicago White Sox had this incredible streak, I think it was about 150, 180 consecutive games where they did not come back trailing after 8. The Houston Astros last year made the postseason. We remember that. They got knocked out in the wild card round, but they made the postseason. The Houston Astros also did not win a game when trailing after 8. So, little bit of background. The Astros pulled off the same feat as the Mets last year. They made the playoffs. They didn't go anywhere, but they did make the playoffs. Teams tend to come back on average 5 to 6 times during a year. The league leader will be around 8 or 9 times. It is not uncommon, though, for there to be 1 or 2 teams that do not come back. The Mets were the only team that accomplished that in 2025. But like I mentioned, the White Sox, though they suck historically, had a very long streak of not coming back. So that is some background. Now, with all that information given, let's dive in. And let's go right to opening day. Because opening day actually featured one of the comebacks the Mets failed on that is probably most memorable. They were trailing 3-0 going into the 9th inning against Josh Hader. And what's funny is Josh Hader comes into this game and he's facing the bottom half of the Met order with a 3-run lead. As Andy even pointed out in his email, that's usually an easier save. That's usually one of those comebacks that you just don't expect. The Mets started their comeback with an 0-2 base hit by Starling Marte and a behind-the-count base hit by Tyrone Taylor and then Luis Angel Acuña. For as much of his season was very mediocre or non-impactful, Luis Angel Acuña probably had his best at-bat of the year on opening day. It was that 12-pitch at-bat in which he drew a walk to load the bases with nobody out, down by 3 runs against Josh Hader. Hayden Senger struck out. Francisco Lindor hit a ball to center field for a sacrifice fly, and it set up Juan Soto with 2 on, 2 out, down by 2, ahead of the count 3-0. It felt like Hader wanted nothing to do with Soto, and then it got to 3-2, and he swung at ball 4, Mets lose. That felt like one of those comebacks. I didn't know this at the time. I remember doing the Rico right after opening day, all pissed off. We all were pissed off, disappointed. Can't be really mad at Soto. He was on base 3 times in the game, but more disappointed with how the thing ended. Who knew that that comeback or that fake comeback, that Fugazi comeback or that non-comeback would actually be a sign of things to come, that they wouldn't come back? But I would qualify that failed comeback as not a colossal failure, but disappointing. Your base is loaded, nobody out. And eventually you're going to get your best hitters up in Lindor and Soto. They had a shot right there and there. Opening day could have been very successful. So that's loss number 1. Let's go to loss number 2. This is another brutal one. There are some of these that you circle and say, you should have come back. Game 3 of that opening series against the Houston Astros. The Mets are trailing 2-1 going into the 9th inning, and Juan Soto, facing Josh Hader rematch, draws a walk. Does what he should have done in the at-bat against Hader on opening day. So the Mets are down a run, 9th inning, leadoff man on, Alonso, Nimmo, and Vientos coming up, and they all went down meekly. Alonso swung at the first pitch and popped up to second base. Nimmo grounded out weakly to second, and then Vientos had a line drive right at the shortstop, Jeremy Pena, and that was it. So both of those situations in Houston, I think, were certainly possible comebacks. That's what I would say. They're possible comebacks. Now, let me get to this game because, actually, let me get to game 2 of the series against Miami. Another possible comeback. They trail 4-2 going into the 9th inning, and they are facing Anthony Veneziano. I barely remember that guy. And they have the heart of the order coming up. So this is another comeback that could have been, dare I say, should have been down by two, heart of the order, on the road against Anthony Venziano. And Juan Soto begins the rally with a walk. We're noticing a pattern here. Alonso grounds into a fielder's choice, Nimmo base hit. So down a run, two on, one out. Then they go to Anthony Bender to face Mark Vientos and Jesse Winker. And Vientos flies out to deep right, and Jesse Winker grounds out. So these first three in the 0-70, dude, they're right there. These are all comebackable, dramatic victories right there for you. Two against Josh Hader, and now against garbage in the Miami bullpen. Now, the finale of this series against the Marlins, this is what I like to call an honorable mention, because I'm about to talk about a win, but a win that did feature heart and did feature a comeback, just to be fair. They were trailing 3-0. Well, I'm sorry. They were trailing 4-1 in the eighth inning. I knew they were down by three runs. 4-1 in the eighth inning. They're about to lose this series to Miami because this is the rubber game, and that's when Pete Alonso hit a dramatic game-tying, two-out, three-run home run in the top of the eighth inning to tie the game up at four. This is where the whole they-don't-come-back narrative we have to at least pause on, because there are games this season, while they don't qualify in the trailing after a category, this was a great comeback, and it felt like an important comeback early in the season. Down by three, two outs in the eighth inning, about to lose a series to the Marlins, have a losing road trip to start the year, and Pete hits a three-run home run. They took the lead in the 11th and then held on and won. So this is one of those honorable mention games. They came back, that's for sure, but it wasn't technically a ninth-inning comeback. So those are our first three losses. The Mets home opener, they win. Second game against the Blue Jays, they win. Third game against the Blue Jays, they win. All is good with the world. First game against the Marlins, they win. We're on a five-game winning streak. Everybody's happy. Then we get to another potential rally, and that was the final game of the series against the Marlins. They were losing 2-0 in the ninth inning, so comebackable game, and Edwin Diaz actually let the game slip away. It was one of those rare negative moments for Diaz because he came in and let the game slip. So now they're down 5-0 in the ninth inning. They did have the heart of the order coming up, or at least the top of the order coming up, of Lindor, Soto, and Alonso, but they went down 1-2-3. It was 5-0. It was the final game of the series. I think Diaz almost took the soul out, to be fair, after giving up those three runs in the ninth inning. So I think you look at that non-comeback and say, okay, fine. It's an okay, fine. Now we go to Sacramento. Late Saturday afternoon in Sacramento, they're taking on the A's, and they're trailing 3-1 going into the ninth inning against Mason Miller, who at the time was with the A's, obviously ends up getting traded to the Padres. The first two guys both make out. Vientos grounds out, Beatty strikes out. So it's a two-run game. First two guys make out. They get a two-out single by Tyrone Taylor. Hold on, I was looking at my scorecard, and it said Jose Siri. And I said, no, it couldn't have been. Jose Siri didn't do it. Actually, this was the game Jose Siri got hurt. And so Tyrone Taylor.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos,
maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, everyone. I'm Josh Radner, and I am so excited to tell you about How We Made Your Mother, a rewatch podcast looking back at How I Met Your Mother. And I'm here with Craig Thomas, who co-created the show along with Carter Bays. Hi, Craig.
Hey, Josh. Somehow it has been 20 years since the show premiered. I'm going to check the math on that. 10 years since it went off the air. And we thought that made this a perfect time to look back, see what the hell we did, and why the show still seems to resonate with fans around the world today.
Follow and listen to How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.
I replaced him in the second inning of this game. This is when he fouled the ball off of his leg, and then we never saw him for months and months and months. So they get a two-out hit by Tyrone Taylor, and it brings up Luis Torrens as the tying run in the ninth inning against Mason Miller. And he had a good at-bat. Like, he fouled a bunch of pitches off and eventually grounds out. So another kind of opportunity. Wouldn't have been easy. You are facing Mason Miller. You do have the bottom of the order coming up. But nevertheless, it doesn't happen. Let's get to game two of the series in Minnesota against the Twins. They're trailing 6-3 in the ninth inning. They are facing Johan Duran, who we would see later in the year with Philadelphia. The Mets would actually have some success against. But they're trailing by 3 runs in the ninth inning against one of the better closers in baseball. On the surface, an understandable non-comeback, but they were given an opportunity. Mark Vientos led off the inning by hitting a ground ball right at the shortstop, Carlos Correa. And what does he do? He throws the ball away. Actually, according to my scorecard, it wasn't him. He was out of the game by this point. It was Willy Castro, just to be accurate. Willy Castro makes a throwing error. So down by 3, you get the leadoff man on. Next two guys ground out, and Acuna gets a hit. So tying run at the plate for Francisco Lindor against Duran, and he strikes out. So comebackable, I guess. I don't know. Not really. I mean, when you're facing Duran and you're down by 3 runs in the ninth inning, it's tough to expect more. But they did get the tying run at the plate, so they put something together. Next day, the finale against the Twins. This is another one of those comebacks we have to give them some credit for. They're trailing 3-0 in the eighth inning, and they rally to tie the game off the Twin bullpen in the eighth inning. Alonso, RBI double. Winker, RBI double. And then, of all people, Luis Angel Acuna tied the game with a two-out hit before Tyrone Taylor lined out. And then Reed Garrett gave up the lead in the 10th inning. A leadoff base hit to tie France, with the Manfred man coming in to score, and the Mets lose the game. So they did come back. This actually doesn't count as one of those failing to come back in the eighth inning or later because they ended up losing the game in the 11th inning. But I thought it was fair to point this out because I am going to point out the comebacks because 0-70 is 0-70, but we should hear about those other moments where there were comebacks just to help us clarify what we think of this streak. Because that's what this is about. I want you to digest all the information, and then we determine, does this mean they were gutless? What the hell does any of this mean? Now let's move on. Oh, they're going to sweep the Cardinals here, so that's good. No comebacks. No comebacks necessary when you're whipping ass. Mets-Phillies. Mets held on, won that game. That was a win. Oh, there's a big winning streak. Won that game. All right, here is the tricky one about the comebacks that we need to address.
The holidays have arrived at the Home Depot, and we're here to help bring the excitement with decor for every part of your home. Check out our wide assortment of easy-to-assemble pre-lit trees so you can spend less time setting up and more time celebrating. And bring your holiday spirit outdoors with unique decor like one of our Santa inflatables. Whatever your style, find the right pieces at the right prices this holiday season at the Home Depot.
This episode is brought to you by Marshalls, where you never have to compromise between quality and price. The buyers of Marshalls hustle hard, working to bring you great deals on brand name and designer pieces. Because Marshalls believes everyone deserves access to the good stuff. Visit a Marshalls store near you or shop online at marshalls.com.
On April 23rd, this is the midst of the Met winning streak, They're playing the Philadelphia Phillies in the finale of the series. The Phillies take the lead in the 10th inning. Okay. They go up 3-2. Manfred Mann comes in to score. The Mets then rally in the bottom of the 10th inning and walk it off and win 4-3 on a game-winning Starling Marte RBI single. Hoff, is this not like a caveat to the whole stat? They were trailing after 8 innings. They were trailing in the bottom of the 10th inning, and they came back and won on April 23rd. Like, I stumbled upon this. I sort of remembered it because it was a great win. They swept the Phillies. It was April. But that's a comeback. 8th inning or later, it's the 10th inning. That doesn't count. What are we doing here?
Yeah, I don't know why they don't add that in there, but I guess technically they were down in the 9th. So is that what they're trying to say? That, I mean, if you want to take it literal, they weren't down in the 9th. That's the problem. But you're right. It's a comeback win.
That is an absolute, for the spirit of the stat, the spirit of the stat is they didn't come back. They never came back with their lives on the line, right? Because that's what it means after the 8th inning. Like, you're down to your final few outs. They were down to the final three outs in the bottom of the 10th inning, losing a game 3-2. So I think this is very important. This has to count as a one. They really won in 70 in these games.
Well, here, okay, so let me ask you a question. Like, right, it is a replay. They, you know, at second base when a guy slides and you see like a tiny bit of space or whatever it is, or maybe the guy's off the bag for like 1 second. And if you have to really slow it down to see that. Is that really the rule that we were looking for? Are we trying, like, instant replay? We had a reason for it. We want to make sure we get the call right. But now we're like trying to nitpick everything and overlooking and we things that we would have never done before. So now we're basically taking an 0-70 and saying, well, let's go back and really break it down. Why was this 0-70? And in this case, it wasn't.
In this case, it wasn't. And I will help everybody out. There's no other game that's going to fit this. Like, there's no other extra inning game in which they were just losing in the top of the 11th and they came back and won in the bottom of the 11th. So I will still admit that there aren't many of these comebacks. Like, that's the whole point. The Mets didn't come back a lot when their lives were on the line or their game was on the line. But this is an example where they did. And it's honestly one of the great wins of the year. We're going to have a Rico Bronya a few months from now, once we can really digest, where we rank the best wins of the year. And you could argue that that game against the Phillies was certainly up there. It got them to sweep. It got them to beat the Phillies. They came back in the bottom of the 10th inning, but it was a comeback. Just want to point that out. All right, the loss against the Nationals that started their four-game series in Washington was the opposite of what we're talking about. They actually had a lead in the 9th inning. Actually, let me go back a little further on this. They were losing to the Nationals 3-0 going into the 8th inning. 3-0 going into the 8th inning. And the Mets put together a pretty impressive rally that got capped off by a 3-run bases-clearing triple by Mark Vientos. It was a bloop triple, but nevertheless, it was a bloop triple that gave the Mets the lead. They were down 3-0. They got it to 3-1 on an infield hit by Brandon Nimmo and then dramatically took the lead on this triple by Mark Vientos. So they did come back 3-0 down, not eighth inning or later, but the eighth inning, and then proceeded to blow the game in the 9th inning because Edwin Diaz wasn't available. This was a part of the Ryan Stanek disaster weekend against Washington. He had a one-run lead, gave up a leadoff triple to Dylan Cruz, an RBI single to Jose Tenya, and then eventually A.J. Minter came in the game and gave up a walk-off RBI single to James Wood. So this game I wanted to mention because the Mets did have a great comeback, but then they proceeded to blow the game, the opposite of really the whole examination here. And then they would do it again later in the series. Game three of the series against Washington, they had a 7-1 lead in the 7th inning. You know what's so painful going through these games? If any one of these games goes differently, the Mets make the postseason, but whatever. They have a 7-1 lead going into the 7th inning, and they give up 5 runs to make it 7-6. And then again, in the 9th inning, no Edwin Diaz, Here's Ryan Stanek to proceed to blow the game. And they actually lost the game on a Pete Alonso error. Stanek gave up a leadoff double. They tied the game on an RBI single by C.J. Abrams. And then with one out and two on, Luis Garcia hit a ground ball to Pete, and Pete made that terrible throw home. And the Mets lost. So it was Ryan Stanek, but it was also, unfortunately, Pete Alonso, if we are being fair. We move on. Let's go to game two of a three-game series against the Arizona Diamondbacks. They are trailing 4-1 going into the ninth inning. And Ryan Thompson comes in to pitch. So it's a three-run game. He gives up a leadoff home run to Tyrone Taylor to make it 4-2. Walks Lindor, walks Soto, hits Alonso. This is a killer. So it's 4-2. Bases loaded, nobody out, down by two runs in the bottom of the ninth inning. Stop right there. You got to win this effing game. You know, we talk about the ones that you're like, you know what? You're facing Duran. It's tough. You're down by three. F this. You got the bases loaded with nobody out, down by two runs, and you're facing Ryan Thompson. Actually, let me correct myself. They faced Justin Martinez, and he got pulled when he put the first three guys on base. He gave up the home run to Taylor. He walked Lindor. He hit Soto. It was at this point when Lovello went to Ryan Thompson, who hits Alonso. So bases loaded, nobody out, down by two. Let's see how this thing went to hell. Vientos struck out. Winker grounded out for a run to come in. They intentionally walked Jeff McNeil. So now it's 4-3 with the bases loaded and two out, and Francisco Alvarez grounded out to third base. Yeah, that's one you got to get. That's a comeback you got to get. No other way to put it. The next day against Arizona, they're trailing 3-1 in the eighth inning. They get one back on a Soto solo home run. Then they give the run back in the ninth inning, so they're down 4-2 in the bottom of the ninth inning, and they went down 1-2-3. Luis Torrens, Jeff McNeil, Tyrone Taylor go down 1-2-3, and they lose 4-2. That one sucks. Like, don't get me wrong. Down by two, you have a shot. But the one before is the worst, man. Base is loaded, nobody out, and you're down by two runs? That can't happen. That's one of those comebacks you got to make. Let's get to Mets Cardinals doubleheader. Split doubleheader on May 4th. The Mets are trailing 6-3 going into the eighth inning, and they rally. They get a big two-run single by Francisco Lindor to make it 6-5. Juan Soto walks, so they're down by a run, two on, one out in the eighth. Alonso strikes out looking, Nimmo flies out. So they're down by a run now, going into the ninth inning, and they face Ryan Helsley. Little did we know, they get the leadoff man on. The leadoff man gets on. Mark Vientos singles. Marte pinch runs, goes to second on a wild pitch. They're all down by a run here. Torrens strikes out. McNeil flies out. Acuna pops out to second base. That's another one. That's another one of those where that's right there. You got the leadoff man on, down by a run. First game of a doubleheader too, so who knows about bullpen usage. And just can't get a big hit. And it's odd, I'm looking at this. Alvarez was available off the bench if they wanted a pinch hit for Acuna. But you know what? Acuna had three hits that day. It's a reminder that Acuna was actually a pretty good little ball player back in April and May. Like, he was contributing even now. I mean, he was hitting 300 at that point in the season. Was playing good defense, had good speed. Yeah, that's another blown opportunity by the New York Mets. Game two of the doubleheader. That was the game they were trailing 5-4. Michael McGreevy came in out of the bullpen and looked like a god. And the Mets got mowed down. This was a bad one. They were losing 5-4. And McGreevy finished the game out and retired the final 10 guys. So in the ninth inning, down by a run, they actually had the heart of the order. It didn't matter. Alonso struck out. Vientos grounded out. Brandon Nimmo flied out. That just feels like they were dead. Like, the bats were just, they had nothing going on in that game. Let's go to game two against the Diamondbacks, May 6th. 2025. Mets are trailing 5-1 going into the ninth inning. They actually put a rally together. Leadoff walk by Soto. Alonso strikeout. Marte base hit. So they didn't get the tying run to the plate, but they did put 2-1-1 out before Nimmo lined out and Vientos popped out. You're not coming back in that game. Would have been nice, but you're not coming back in that game. Let us go on to game two of their series against the Chicago Cubs. I starred this game because Cade Horton made his MLB debut and obviously had a very good rookie season. Mets trail 6-3 going into the eighth inning. They get two runs back on a Brett Beatty two-run home run to make it 6-5. Ninth inning, they're facing Porter Hodge. They get a 10-pitch at-bat walk by Jeff McNeil. So another one of those spots where they're down by a run and they get the leadoff man on base. Lindor bounces into a 1-6-3 double play. Killer. And then Juan Soto grounds out. That's another disappointing one. Down by a run, leadoff man on at home in your own building, and you do nothing from it. This is one where the Mets walked off, but they blew the lead in the ninth inning, and then they beat the Pittsburgh Pirates on a Pete Alonso sacrifice fly. So, yeah, not really a comeback. I guess it's more of a response to blowing a one-run lead in the ninth inning. Then you've got May 14th against the Pittsburgh Pirates. They are down 4-0. They go down 1-2-3 in the eighth with Vientos, Alonso, and Nimmo versus David Bednar, who was pitching the eighth inning that day. Then down 4-0, they get a leadoff single by Starling Marte, and then Torrens, Beatty, and Acuna go down easily against Dennis Santana. So that's a lifeless 4-0 game. I remember that game specifically because the Knicks were in Boston. I went to the Knicks-Celtics game, so it was one of those rare games I didn't score. I was watching it on my phone at the Knicks playoff game, and they were just lifeless. And that was also the game where they sat Juan Soto right before the Subway Series because the weather was kind of crappy. And I guess it was just let's get him a day. But the Mets got shut out by five different Pirate pitchers that day. Bailey Falter, 3 2/3. Chase Shugart, 2 1/3. Tanner Rainey, a scoreless inning. David Bednar, a scoreless inning. Dennis Santana, a scoreless inning. So that's just a lifeless, you know, kind of pathetic loss. Then we get to the Subway Series Mets-Yankees. The Mets are trailing 6-1 going into the ninth inning, and they put together like a stunning rally against Yerry De Los Santos, and then eventually Luke Weaver had to come into the game. One out, nobody on. They get a walk by Alvarez. Again, they are down by five runs going into the ninth inning. Lead off a one-out walk, then the second out's made, then another walk. Then an RBI double by Francisco Lindor. So now they're trailing 6-2. Juan Soto comes up, not as the tying run, but they're a batter away from the tying run coming to the plate. Soto faces Luke Weaver, and he flies out. Yeah, that would have been an amazing comeback, but you're down by five runs going into the ninth inning. You don't expect it. The finale of that Subway Series was kind of the same thing. It was a 2-2 game late. Yankees blew it open in the eighth inning. Cody Bellinger ends up hitting a grand slam. And so they go into the ninth inning down 8-2. They went down 1-2-3. The game was freaking over. I think we all kind of knew that. Now we go to the Boston Series. We are in the middle of May. So things have not even gotten bad yet. Like, it's the middle of May. We're feeling okay. They trail 3-1 going into the ninth inning against Aroldis Chapman. Not really much. Vientos strikes out to start the inning. Marte gets a one-out single, and Alvarez, first pitch, 4-6-3 double play. So close game, down by two, elite-level closer. They do get the tying run to the plate, but it really goes nowhere. Game two of the series, another two-run game. They're down 2-0 going to the ninth inning. Again, Aroldis Chapman, and pretty much the same hitters. It was Vientos, McNeil, and Alvarez. And they showed no life. Ground out, pop up. Another one of those games where the offense didn't really do anything at all. I mean, completely. They got shut down. They only had four hits the entire game. They did win the finale of that series, so that was good. Now we got Mets-Dodgers. This is another one of those, we have to acknowledge this game in terms of the Mets coming back. This was arguably one of the most entertaining games of the season. Clayton Kershaw versus Griffin Canning, interrupted by a nearly 1 hour and 40 minute rain delay. So rain delay comes, both guys are out of the game. Dodgers jump out to a 3-0 lead, eventually a 5-2 lead. In fact, they take the 5-2 lead into the ninth inning. So here's a ninth inning comeback for you, even though the Mets are going to lose. Spoiler alert. Leadoff man gets on. Soto pops up. Alonso walks. Two-run triple by Brandon Nimmo. I think it's Brandon Nimmo, yeah. Jeff McNeil replaced him at some point in this game. Actually, no, it's Jeff McNeil. Nimmo came out of the game in the third inning for whatever reason. I guess he was hurt that day. I don't even remember. So two-run double by McNeil to make it a one-run game, and then game-tying RBI single by Tyrone Taylor. So they complete the 5-2 comeback to make it 5-5. Then they still got a chance to win the game. I mean, they're right there. Runner on first, one out. Alvarez pops up. They get a base hit by Beatty, and here comes Acuna, two on, two out, chance to walk off the Dodgers, complete this comeback. He strikes out. Dodgers don't score in the 10th. Mets don't score in the 10th. Dodgers don't score in the 11th. Mets don't score in the 11th. Dodgers don't score in the 12th. Mets don't score in the 12th, which is just insanity considering the runner on second rule. And then the Dodgers break through in the 13th. RBI double by Teoscar Hernandez. Sacrifice fly by Andy Pajes. And they take a two-run lead into the bottom of the 13th inning. And unfortunately, the Mets go down 1-2-3. Let's see who the three guys were. McNeil, Taylor, and Alvarez. So they show a lot of fight in coming back. A ninth inning comeback. They just can't complete it. And that happened a few times this season. The one that jumps out at me late in the year is the game against Washington. But they come back from three runs down, tie the game, and blow every freaking opportunity to win the game and eventually lose the game in 13 innings.
So it's not a comeback win, but it is a comeback. So should it not be like, should it be like a race from the records? Like their loss came in the 13th inning. Right,
but they still lost.
Right, so maybe you put like a tie on that.
Well, but hold on a second. Here's what I don't know, and I'm not doing this in the Rico. Like we're gonna go through each game, and we can all make our judgments on this. I don't even know if that game counts in the 0-70. Like I don't know that because the 0-70 is such a weird rule. When we laid out a game in which they were trailing in the 10th inning that they came back and won, so technically. That game we just went through probably doesn't count as anything because they didn't lose the game when trailing after eight because they came back and tied the game, but they still lost the game, if that makes any sense.
None of this makes sense.
Well, because we're told a number and it seems to make sense on the surface. Well, they're 0-70 when trailing after eight. When you do a deeper dive on it, I don't know if that game counts. Here's what I do know. The win against the Phillies doesn't count because they came back and won it. So it should be, based on that, it would be 1-70. Well, all I know is that game I just went through, that Dodger game, they came back. Now, they still shot themselves in the foot 15 times because they could have won the game five ways till Thursday. But there have been games in which they have come back to save.
Well, and right now, this might be a good place for you to take a little break. And maybe continue to another episode. I don't know. We have a lot to go. I have it at 1-20.
You're counting along, and you have them at. Well, you can't count the Philly one though. You can't count that.
Why not?
I guess you could. Right. All right. You know what? I like this. We are doing our own counter. So as of right now, the Rico Bronya has the 2025 Mets through May 25th at 1-20 when trailing after eight innings.
I love it. We just burst this bubble, baby.
Damn right. Now we will continue on in our next edition of 0-70. How the hell did that happen? as we will go through games in late May, June, July, and throughout this baseball season. But this is a deep dive of how the Mets did this, and even if it's true. We appreciate you listening and downloading the Rico Bronya. Remember to subscribe so you never miss an episode, because you never know when we're going to pop on with some breaking news to discuss. Thank you very much for listening to another edition of the Rico.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Rico Bronya podcast. It's amazing, isn't it? Make sure you download it now to keep it on you at all times.
Tonight's the first date that's been weeks in the making. Hair? Done. Nails? Done. Every square inch of your body? Exfoliated. Then you see it. A pesky pimple the size of a respectable mountain. The good news? Mighty Patch Pimple Patches can absorb gunk in just 6 hours. Patch the problem area and shrink the look of whiteheads faster than your makeup skills could anyway. Shop Mighty Patch at all major retailers.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
It's not coming from Brett Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a great conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, everyone, I'm Josh Radner, and I am so excited to tell you about How We Made Your Mother, a rewatch podcast looking back at How I Met Your Mother. And I'm here with Craig Thomas, who co-created the show along with Carter Bays. Hi, Craig.
Hey, Josh. Somehow it has been 20 years since the show premiered. I'm going to check the math on that. 10 years since it went off the air. And we thought that made this a perfect time to look back, see what the hell we did and why the show still seems to resonate with fans around the world today.
Follow and listen to How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.